Morning. Technology Bytes is coming up next. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next Wednesday, peace on earth.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings, and welcome to Technology Bites.
Hail and well met.
Welcome. I don't hear anything in my headphones.
I hear you.
The perfect show. Turn up the headphones, turn up the volume, pump up the volume. There we go.
It's one of those. There you go.
Yay!
Yay!
All right, so welcome to Technology Bites. This is going to be weird. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
And I'm Lee.
And he's Lee.
Because that's it.
Because Barrett is on a motorcycle touring around Italy.
Hmm.
And Groovehouse is at whatever that place, the Toyota Center, photographing the Rockets as they prepare to go down 0-2 against the Los Angeles Clippers.
Yeah. Boo. Boo.
You said Barrett is streaming across Italy on a Vespa.
He's actually on a full-size motorcycle right now.
Sure.
Nice.
For real.
But at least he's, you know, so far, based on his Facebook feed, he's still alive and the motorcycle's still working.
Quality.
That won't last.
Which one of those won't last?
Yes.
Either way. Yes.
Oh, my.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so yeah, we're rooting for Barrett to come back to us alive, which would be awesome.
I guess.
Yay.
Ooh. Lee is moving in. Lee likes the extra space in the studio.
I do. Now. I'm going to press the phone box buttons, too.
He's taken off his pants and propped his feet up in Barrett's chair.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. All right. So, yes. Well, hey, listen, everybody. Hey, it's a fundraiser tonight, and last week we did really well. We went over our goal. We went well over our goal last week.
Mm-hmm.
And this week we have pre-pledge monies in the kitty for the total amount is, I think, $450 total.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
We want to thank Susan, who pledged on the web from Albuquerque.
Thank you, Susan.
And we want to thank Lewis, who pledged here in Houston. Those two pledges combined, we have $450 towards our goal of $1,000.
You guys rock. Thank
Man.
You.
So we are well on our way just starting up tonight, just going in. And like, you know, last week we did so well, we did it really fast. So we were able to have a mostly normal show for most of the night.
As much as we're normal.
And we were normal enough to drive Ernesto from the studio so he could go get some much-needed rest because he worked so hard during the fundraiser.
Thank you.
And we'd like to do that again. I mean, it was nothing personal. Hey. We didn't want to get rid of you. But we do have some special incentives. So we have one extra special incentive tonight. If you want to come down by the radio station, come down to the station tonight before we're off the air, you can get a selfie taken with the pledge python.
As they say in the fight game, the champ is here. Doesn't matter. He's sitting in the chair right beside me.
I forgot the python.
I haven't taken
name.
Him out of the box yet, though. I
Kiwi.
Should.
Kiwi, the pledge python.
Yes.
It's the Pacifica pledge python, or the pledge python of Pacifica.
Is he a vegan python?
Oh, no.
I can't even
sugarcoat that one. No.
You haven't encountered Ernesto with his box. He gets his frozen rats delivered.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Jay's been here when the box shows up.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, you think, well, that box doesn't really have frozen rats in it.
That's,
yep.
That's, says that's on code for something.
It's, oh, no.
It's not code.
I think you could put anything you wanted in a box labeled frozen rats and pretty much get it anywhere you
yeah,
want
to. Pretty much nobody will open it.
You know, I'm going to take your word on that.
Yep.
Assume that there really
I
are.
I opened it, that box for Dwayne last time it was here. I think he was a little skeptical, and I opened it up for him. I said, here you go.
So
he was convinced.
If you want to come down by the station and make a pledge, any pledge amount, you know, $5, $10, membership level, and get a picture, get a selfie with the pledge python. I think we're going to make Lee get a selfie with the pledge python.
I'm down with that.
You can, yeah. We can also put it on KPFT's Instagram account or your own, or I can take your picture for you or
put
whatever.
Put it on the Facebook, on our Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally down with that.
So we're inviting you to do that. Now, we only have to raise 550.
Well, 550.
Our goal is $1,000.
Okay.
We're 550. So my math, I'm going to math here.
I don't.
Nice.
50.
I use computers, so I don't have to math.
You have a shortcut to calculator, or do you Google it?
No, actually, Spotlight just does it now, too.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, you can say, like 10 plus 3 or whatever right in Spotlight. I think you can even do crazy stuff like SQRT 70. No, no, it doesn't
SQRT.
Do that.
SQRT.
Nice. Yes. Yeah. No, no, no. I, so
why?
Yes.
Because
I have a Mac,
love you.
So I don't need any of that.
Wow, look at that. You can just type in equations.
See, there you go. Mm. You're supposed to learn something new every day. And
I did.
There's your thing for today.
I did.
Nice.
10 plus 3 does equal 13. I can confirm that because of Spotlight on the Mac.
Fabulous.
Awesome. All right. So all right. What we're looking for is to make our goal and just get this over with. So the phone number here is 713-526-5738 to make a pledge of support. And we do have volunteers standing by to take your pledge. Again, if we can make that goal, knock it out real quick, we'll just move on to other things and have a regular show. But the most important thing we can do tonight is raise this goal. And it's really reasonable, especially with how much we've got in the kitty right now to get all the way to $1,000 here tonight. Saeed just had a real successful fundraising episode, so good for him.
Yep.
We don't want to fall short of Arab Voices, so we need to continue on where they left off with their powerful and strong finish.
Do they have a big gift at the end? Is that what we heard as we were walking in?
Yeah, actually, there was a guy named Alan from Cleveland who called in a $600 pledge.
Wow.
And he challenged other people to make that kind of a pledge, which, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, it breaks down not very much over the course of a month, over a year. And he challenged somebody else, and somebody else picked up the challenge. And somebody else during this show could accept that challenge, too, from Alan out in Cleveland. So 713-526-5738 is the number if you'd like to accept Alan's challenge out from Cleveland.
I've seen all these fabulous signs here for the iPad mini giveaway. Is that still on?
Do we still have one? Yes, we
have actually several of them. So we gave away our first one last Thursday.
All right.
And we have another giveaway happening on Thursday. So if you would like to get your name into the hat for that iPad mini drawing, by all means, now is your time to call. When you make that pledge of support, you will get a name written down, and we'll drop it into that hat. And, hey, maybe you could win an iPad mini when you make that pledge.
Now, I'm not going to name any names, but I was listening to another show here on KPFT during the day, and they were...
Rourke. No, I'm just kidding.
they were talking about... they were doing their fundraising, and they talked about the fact that we had an iPad mini to give away as, you know, to get your, you know, a raffle for one of these if you make a pledge. And the host of the show did ask the off-air coordinator or the lobby host what an iPad mini was.
That sounds like Rourke. I'm just kidding.
I was thinking maybe it's Rick Escardo.
Maybe it could be. That's and you know, it
was Technology Bite. So what am I kidding?
My.
Lee didn't know what.
What's
it was.
What's an IPID?
An IPID.
IPID.
So yeah, we have an iPad Mini, and I don't. You know, the one thing it doesn't have on here are the specs of the Mini. On this,
if it's Retina or not, is that what we're wondering?
Well, I'm wondering if it's got 3G or if it's Wi-Fi only or how much memory. Or...
The picture is not of a 3G Mini. The picture is of a Wi-Fi. Yeah, because the 3G one has a plastic cutout on the back.
I could probably go
radio
look.
Has to come out of it. The aluminum has to have a cutout for the cellular radio.
Really?
Yes, really. Yeah. That's right. If you look at iPads that have cellular on them, on the back there's always a black plastic. Tastefully done cutout where the cell radio does has its antenna bits. And on the Wi-Fi only ones, it's all aluminum on the back with no cell radio cutout. So then now you know.
Now I know.
So
I feel educated.
It looks like a Wi-Fi only.
This
iPad
is why you pledge to learn right. these things.
We will, and we've got lots more to teach you, but first we have to pledge.
713-526-5738. 713-526-5738 to make a pledge of support if you're in the lovely People's Republic of Montrose and would like to stop by KPFT 419 Lovett Boulevard and drop your pledge. You can certainly do that too. So 713-526-5738, however, is the number to call if you could help out right now, because we don't have a lot to raise, but if we could do this really early, it'd be so nice. Get to some regular programming that you enjoy. Blew it out last week. Can we do it again?
It was really great to be a part of that last week, actually. I've been doing the show for since October. Is October when I started to come on, or was it a little bit after that?
It was actually before that, because I was in Iceland in August. Okay.
Yeah, and this was, last week was the...
July, actually, so it was before July.
Okay, yeah, I guess I came on regularly then, but yeah, this was the first this was the first pledge drive I've participated in where we actually beat goal. And it was pretty neat. That was a great feeling. I like that.
Yeah.
I'd like to have it again.
You should have seen the perplexed, quizzical look when we didn't make it the last time. You know, and Lee's like, Okay, so it's a great show. Everybody enjoys it, but nobody's willing to pay for it.
I put in my $20 last time.
Good for you.
I did.
All right, so we're looking for you to do your part tonight. The phones are quiet right now. We'd like to get that first phone call in here this evening and get a pledge on the line. We have thank you gifts to give you. We have KPFT t-shirts. We've got concert tickets that Ernesto will tell you about in a little bit. We've got all kinds of goodies that we can say, you know, give you to say thanks for making a pledge. But most importantly, you're pledging because, you know, you believe in KPFT and you want to support Technology Bites here. We've been broadcasting live on the radio every week for 20 years now. Coming up, we're just shy of our 20-year anniversary. So we've been at this a long time. You know, for us, some people think the 90s are about their favorite 90s band. The 90s to us are all about Windows 95.
Nice. That's true, actually. It really is.
It really kind of sad but true. Windows 95, we share a birthday with that. So if you remember, you know, Windows 95 and how exciting that was.
Was the show's first thing really around when Windows 95 launched?
It was before 95 launched.
That's crazy.
It was really, I guess it was even closer to when internet got to the home, when people started dialing into the internet from home directly. That really started taking off right around when the show started.
That's wild. Yeah, I was working at the local Babbage's down in Clear Lake when Windows 95 launched. Fun times. Remember those remember that midnight launch and all that crazy stuff? Those were the days. Well, that's a really strong and proud heritage we've got going here. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, so that's another reason why the Buddy Holly song is our theme song.
Oh yeah, because that was an Easter egg on the Windows 95 disc and the CD version, not the actual. There was for real a floppy version, but on the CD version, wasn't there a second video too, or was it just the one?
There might have been another video, but it was not as exciting as seeing Weezer in the diner from Happy Days.
Little postage stamp sized ABI file.
Yeah, those were good times. So
those good times.
So now we have a version of that song performed on analog synthesizers that sounds like a MIDI track.
Yep.
So that's the level of thought and consideration that goes into the production of Technology Bites every week and for the last 20 years. So that might be worth a pledge. Might be worth.
Maybe.
All we need is, we need 11 $60 pledges and we're set. So we need 11 people to call in. That is not a difficult number of people. Being one of those people, that puts you in a special elite group. And so all you have to do is pick up the phone, 713-526-5738, and contribute, and then you'll know you've contributed. You'll know you've supported KPFT, and it's a good feeling. You'll get to hear, you know, if you want quick reward, you know, when we hit the goal, then we go to a normal show.
Mm-hmm.
So you call in and pledge and hang out for a little bit. And when everybody else calls in and pledges and we get to our goal, then you get to hear the regular show and you get to know that you were one of the people that was responsible for making that happen.
And we have neat stuff to talk about tonight, too, if we get to that. We've got Tesla stuff. We've got Oculus VR stuff. All kinds of cool stuff's been going on the last
super
week.
Secret malware with interesting strategies to avoid analysis.
Stop using the internet. That's the strategy. Stop it. Live in caves.
Nice.
So all we need is, you know, the key to unlock that is your pledge. 713-526-5738. And, you know, so we can thank you quickly by, you know, getting to the goal and getting the show going in earnest. We can also thank you with entering you in the drawing for an iPad mini. And if you talk to the person at Pledge Central, they can help you figure out if there's some other thing, you know, if there's some other cool thank you that KPFT offers that might fit you better. You know, there's tickets to concerts. There's the usual things when you pledge. Anytime, you know, any kind of public radio pledge thing, you can get T-shirts and towels and coffee cups, coffee mugs. And we've got all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. The main thing we need is you on the line. 713-526-5738. We want to hear that phone ring. We've got that microphone out in the lobby. Mm-hmm. And so when you call, we know it now. We used to have it where we used a different phone line for our pledges, so you couldn't hear it, which kind of made it a little odd, a little clinical. You had to kind of go out and look and kind of see if the volunteers looked busy or not. And you had to try to figure out if they were doing personal phone calls or taking pledges. Well, now we can hear the phone ring and we know that you've called in, and we know to get ready to thank you for your pledge, for your $60 pledge or your $120 pledge, or, you know, if you can swing
There's
it.
There's a phone ringing right
there
now.
There is a phone ring.
And if you can swing it, you know, we don't turn down the big pledges, but we like having everybody who wants to support KPFT, we want them to have that chance. We're democratic on that. You don't, you know, when you put in the big pledge, you don't get more of a chance at the iPad mini than somebody who puts in the basic $40 entry. So you've got an equal chance to win that, and you can, you know, you get your thank you gift. So, you know, it's pretty hard to miss. If you win that mini, if that's something you're into, that's pretty sweet for a thank you gift.
713-526-5738 is the number to call. But let's also be real. I know there are probably some folks who could pledge maybe $15 a month and not even really feel it. And there are probably some other folks that could pledge $10 a month and probably not even notice that. You're going to help us go a long way. We don't have a lot to raise. We've got a little over $500 to raise between now and the end of the show. We could easily do that. A few folks pledging at the $10 a month level, somebody maybe even pledging $20 a month. We have some fantastic thank you gifts. We've got tickets to lots of great shows coming to town. Everybody from George Clinton to the Subdudes to World Party to Beth Hart. Johnny Lang's happening on Friday night. Great blues performer. Get you in the door for any of those things. We have some DVDs available. I know Amy Goodman was featuring something a little bit earlier with the release of the DVD for the film Selma, which just came out today, interviewing the director of that film. And I mean, there's a lot of different thank you gifts that we're happy to offer you, but we just want you to remember that the most important thing that you can get is this fantastic program. I mean, there's always and don't get me wrong, the mug and the t-shirt and the beach towel and the koozie or whatever we may give you, whatever you may be interested in, is a wonderful thing. It's always nice to have, but the best thing of all is the fact that you support public radio. The best part of all is that you have access to something that is so unique and that is so enjoyable, that you appreciate and that you value. Maybe you listen to everything on KPFT. Maybe this is the only thing, but without the entirety of KPFT, all of it goes away. So we need you to please remember that the value of this unique radio station is the fact that you can make that pledge of support. 713-526-5738 is that number to call right now. 713-526-KPFT. Please make those pledges of support. We do want to hear from you. Do have one person I want to send a big thank you out to. Got to send a thank you out to Mike, renewing a membership out in Kingwood. Decided to take us up on that $5 a month pledge. Going to be pledging at the $60 level. Okay, if we can get a few more folks calling in, I mean, we can certainly, as we talked about, get those 11 people pledging at that $60 level, and that is great. But if we can get a few folks maybe stepping up a little bit more, I know we had Alan who called a little bit earlier and threw down a big challenge. Maybe you can do a little bit of that. Maybe you can do all of it. Whatever you can do, please remember this is a great show. They do a lot of fantastic things, hopefully entertain you, brighten up your Wednesday evening. If this is something you'd like to check out, now's the time to call 713-526-5738. If you heard the beginning of the show and you're intrigued by dropping by and facing your snake phobia, you're certainly welcome to stop by 419 Lovett Boulevard, and you can certainly do that if you would like. 713-526-5738, however, is the phone number to call if you would prefer just to kind of keep that phobia and just make the call. That's totally cool, too. We're not going to judge you. 713-526-5738 or kpft.org, however, you will get instant gratification because you're going to talk to a Happy Phone volunteer that's going to run down through a whole list of gifts for you, and we'll be able to thank you immediately right on the spot, and we'll get to hear your phone call, and everybody will go, yay! And rejoicing will be heard throughout the land, and the Oompa Loompas will circle you and all that good stuff. So 713-526-5738.
Talk about phobias. You mentioned Oompa Loompas.
Oh,
scary.
Oh, my.
He just turned purple and blew up.
Ooh, 713-526-5738. Smiling Bob is visiting with somebody on line one. We have, which means we've got a lot of opportunities for you to call 713-526-5738. I did mention some of the tickets that we have available. I know we've only got one pair of tickets left for Butch Hancock, who's going to be coming to town. I know we've only got one pair of tickets left for Mavis Staples with Joan Osborne, going to be performing over at the Do-Si-Do Big Barn over in the Woodlands. Blackberry Smoke, a little bit of rock and roll is happening on Thursday. That's as of like tomorrow. So if you're looking for instant gratification, hey, you can be in the doors at the House of Blues for that show. Johnny Lang, I mentioned, who'll be playing out on Friday over at the House of Blues. Blues Traveler, we've got some tickets available for that. Just got those on the board. And if you're interested in that, we've got four or five pairs of tickets for that. Just put them down. So if you're interested, by all means, give us a call. 713-526-5738. You can pledge for tickets. We have DVDs and books. We've got a lot of great gifts, but the best gift of all is this great show and this great option on the radio dial. Again, maybe this is the only thing you listen to. Maybe it's some things on KPFT you go, ugh, not that fond of. Well, think about cable. If you pay for cable or you pay for Netflix, chances are you might not
you
want to watch
the Honey Boo Boo necessarily, but and you do watch the fight.
There we go. You may not want to watch the Goonies again, but you really want to watch something else.
Hey, the Goonies is actually a
pretty
good
movie. I've actually never seen the Goonies, and I've been ridiculed for that. I've never seen it. But anyway, there are a lot of choices that you can get on TV that you may not even watch or may not even like, but you still keep your cable subscription because there's things you get out of it that you enjoy. Think of KPFT as a subscription to public radio. You're supporting the things that you appreciate, and you're making sure that they're available for you for many, many months and years to come. Got to send a big thank you out to Fred, who is helping us out on the way toward the goal. Put the pledge down on the plastic. Dropped a Benjamin on the table, which is
nice.
Always a nice thing.
Nice.
So moving the
thank
needle
you,
a little
Fred.
Bit closer. We got about $400 to raise between now and the end of the show. If we become a death march, it's going to be the longest show ever. But so let's try to blow this out early. Let's try to do this in this first hour. If somebody can help us out right now, that would be so cool. 713-526-5738.
I got to say that I'm very encouraged by the level of support that we got last week. You know, mm-hmm. we have been struggling a little bit, and you know, over time maybe the format stagnated a bit. But you know, we retooled the show at the end of last year, and we've come into 2015 with guns blazing with this new format. We've added Lee Hutchinson from Ars Technica onto the show, and we've kind of turned it into more of a roundtable discussion. And I like to think that some of these generous pledges that have been coming in this fundraiser are a result of people responding positively to this new format. And if that is something that, if you have tuned in and you're enjoying what you're hearing and you're enjoying the way that the information and news is being presented, maybe that's worth a little bit of a financial contribution from you. And that would also send us a good message to say that we have hit on something that's successful here. Technology can be intimidating. It can be overwhelming. There's so many places available that are presenting all this information, and you can't tell if it's valid or if you need to go check Snopes to see if it's true. But everything that we present here on Technology Bites is filtered through our brains and our experience of dealing with technology. I mean, Lee is a professional technology journalist. Trust him.
That's right.
You know, the rest of us have been working in the tech field for at least as long as this show, if not longer. And you can count on the news and the information that you receive here, and know that it's been filtered properly so that you're getting accurate and useful information.
No, it's really difficult when you're reading popular sources. I mean, all over the web, I face this in my day job. you just never know whether or not the stuff that you're reading is beholden to corporate interests. I mean, the publishing industry in general is very, very, you know, it's struggling right now. The internet is disrupting a lot of things, and it's very difficult to find you know, quality, you know, well-funded, good news sources that aren't also in some way having to run, you know, native content with ads and all kinds of stuff. And that's not an issue with public radio. We're not under the thumb of any kind of big corporation pushing any media agenda. We're just asking you guys for money so that we don't have to do that.
That's a very good point.
We don't have to sensationalize to get you to show up.
Nope.
We don't give you 9 weird tricks to make your pledge go farther.
We could.
We give you the simple, straightforward, you pledge and support the show, and
thank
we
you for
give
that call
you the show
in.
That you expect.
Yeah, that's right, and it's actually really refreshing. I mean, it's not something that is a problem with my day job. I think I don't mean to give that impression earlier. I work at a great place that doesn't do a lot of really funky native advertising, but it's all over the web, everywhere you see it, in every site. It's even, you know, traditional bastions of journalism are doing stuff like that just because it's so hard to make money these days bringing you tech news. Well, we can do it here through listener funding. And the new format, I think, is really great. It's neat. I like being able to participate in this kind of roundtable. This is a great way to get your news filtered with just the right amount of humor added onto it. Because Jay's a funny-looking guy.
I have a face for radio, as they say. All right, so I heard some calls coming in. That's awesome. Why don't we do this? If Flick is paying attention, we could do the – do you have an info shot lined up?
Yeah, I've got a couple articles.
Why don't we do a little bit of news here, and we will hopefully get an updated tally here when we come back from the San Antonio Technology Bites info shot segment, and we'll carry on. But with a few pledges coming in, I know that that we've advanced towards the end zone here and are prepared to score a touchdown, to use a sports ball metaphor.
Hit a home run right into the uprights.
Checkmate.
Flickton is busily deflating the footballs so we can score easily.
Nice.
713-526-5738 is the number to call. Give us a ring. Take it away, InfoShot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, this one's a tough one. It's fascinating to follow the battle between malware and spyware and that, and people trying to detect and oppose it. You know, obviously, objectively, it's kind of cool to watch the back and forth, except on some things when you hear about the lengths that some of these malwares will go to try and protect themselves from being analyzed and thus defeated. There's a new one called Rombertik, R-O-M-B-E-R-T-I-K, which will go to great lengths to evade detection and analysis, including deleting all of the data on the hard drive and rendering your computer inoperable. Isn't that nice? The name Rombertik was given by researchers from Cisco Systems Talos Group. Is a complex piece of software that indiscriminately collects everything a user does on the web. Presumably that's to get your login credentials and your bank account numbers and whatever kind of data it can grab from your activities online. It gets installed when people click on attachments included in malicious emails. So be careful on that one. Talos researchers reverse engineered the software and found that behind the scenes, Rombertik takes a variety of steps to evade analysis. It contains multiple levels of obfuscation and anti-analysis functions that make it hard for outsiders to look at the inner workings. In cases, it's got a component called YFOYE.exe. When that component detects that the malware is under the microscope of a security researcher or a rival malware writer, Rombertik will self-destruct, taking along with it the content of the victim's hard drive. There was a blog post published Monday, and Talos researchers Ben Baker and Alex Chu wrote, "Once the unpacked version of Rombertik within the second copy of YFOI.exe begins executing, one last anti-analysis function is run, which turns out to be particularly nasty if the check fails. The function computes a 32-bit hash of a resource in memory and compares it to the PE compile timestamp of the unpacked sample. If the resource or compile time has been altered, the malware acts destructively. It first attempts to overwrite the master boot record of the physical disk zero, which, you know, the boot disk, which renders the computer inoperable. If the malware does not have permission to overwrite the master boot record, it will instead destroy all files in the user's home folder. You know, for those of you keeping track at home, /documents and settings/administrator. And it destroys them by encrypting each file with a randomly generated RC4 key. So in other words, nobody can, even the people who made the malware can't decode it. It's random. After the MBR is overwritten or the home folder has been encrypted, the computer is restarted. The master boot record starts with code that's executed before the operating system, if you're not familiar with that. The overwritten MBR contains code to print out carbon crack attempt failed, then enters an infinite loop preventing the system from continuing to boot. You know, the other thing is the master boot record has information about the disk partitions. The altered MBR overwrites the bytes for those partitions with null bytes, making it even more difficult to recover data from the sabotaged hard drive. So you can't like boot from a separate drive, and it's more difficult to get stuff off the original drive. Like if it was just the master boot record, it can't just grab off your photos or your documents. Rumbertic also uses a variety of less destructive ways to keep its inner working secret. It's got techniques to evade sandbox tools that, you know, basically, you know, if a researcher will run the malware in a virtual machine or other sandbox type and controlled laboratory environment so that they can see what it's doing. To get around that, it uses it writes a byte of random data to memory 960 million times. The delay that results can trip up the sandbox tool. So the people who wrote this malware know something about malware analysis, and they've put in extra steps to make it difficult from their point of view, trying to make it impossible to analyze what's going on. The random writing to memory can also thwart analysis tools that attempt to document what the malware is doing. So the other trick is if the analysis tool attempts to log all of those write instructions, 960 million write instructions, the log would grow over 100 gigabytes, which usually will blow out the environment that they're in. And even if the environment has enough capacity for the log that large, it would take over 25 minutes just to write out the data on a typical hard drive. So it makes it more complicated. So, you know, in the past, there haven't been as many efforts taken to avoid analysis, but now it's starting to get a little bit more serious. And the malware is taking a lot more effort, and it's willing to destroy your hard drive to protect its secrets. And then the follow up on a story that we've talked about for a while, which is the Stingray, the cellular snooping technology that the feds have been using. Apparently there's been enough pressure from various sources that the Department of Justice is going to conduct a formal review of how, when, and why it uses mobile phone surveillance devices, commonly known as Stingrays. This is according to a report from the Wall Street Journal. There's always a however on these things. They haven't said when or how this is going to happen. The Wall Street Journal reporter who broke the story, Devlin Barrett, tweeted that the internal review began before recent Attorney General Eric Holder left office. According to the story, an unnamed DOJ spokesman said the agency is, quote, examining its policies to ensure they reflect the department's continuing commitment to conducting its vital missions while according appropriate respect for privacy and civil liberties, which is the right thing for them to say. And I found this article at Ars Technica. The DOJ spokesperson, Patrick Rodenbusch, sent ours the same statement. So that's publicly they've validated that publicly. The deal is that stingrays or cell site simulators spoof being a cell phone tower. So they can intercept calls and text messages. And once it's deployed, it gets data from the target phone. You know, so if there's a bad guy they're trying to get that's in the area, it'll get stuff from his phone, but it also gets anybody else's that's in the right area, that's in the vicinity. For years, federal and local law enforcement have tried to keep the existence of this a secret while simultaneously upgrading their capabilities. How far will they go to protect it? Well, less than a week ago, a robbery suspect in St. Louis who had previously pleaded guilty changed her plea after discovering a stingray was used in her case. So the prosecutors dropped all of the charges. Although the attorneys, the prosecutors claim that this had nothing to do with the snooping technology, it's certainly odd. I don't think it's particularly believable. Typically, police deploy stingrays without obtaining a search warrant. In January 2015, the FBI asserted that it does not need a warrant to use them in public. And if they get approval at all, it's usually under a pen register and trap and trace application, which authorities have to show relevance to a criminal investigation rather than prove the probable cause necessary for a warrant. In other words, we're tracking this bad guy and we'd like to record his calls and texts, and this is part of that investigation. So the judge, you know, approves or not based on that, as opposed to we need this, you know, as opposed to it being there being probable cause. We're sure he's going to use this phone to do this criminal act or to give this information. The other thing is the judges who sign off on these arrangements have been typically unaware of these full capabilities of the stingrays. There have been a small number of cases nationwide where charges have been impacted or dropped because defendants challenged the use of stingrays. It's documented that police officers have lied to courts about their use. And this comes from the FBI's non-disclosure agreement with various law enforcement agencies nationwide. And of course, we mentioned a couple weeks ago what those agreements are, you know, that we gave some information on that. Civil liberties advocates are applauding the DOJ's move and looking forward to more details being revealed. Ars Technica talked to American Civil Liberties Union attorney Nathan Wessler, and he said that a shift toward transparency and using warrants is, quote, long overdue, but the slow pace of that transition is troubling, as we found. So, you know, we've been talking about this. We've been following it. I think that if you look around, though, you know, sort of tie this to the pledge drive, if you look or listen around, the number of stories talking about Stingray and what it means and how it works, kind of thin on the ground as far as in radio and on TV and that, you know, there are places, there are outlets online, you know, Ars Technica is one of them, but there are plenty of others who have followed this. But when you look at the kind of traditional media, like KPFT is a part of that by being part of radio, you don't hear about this. And these kinds of stories, getting them out where they're out on the airwaves, where more people can hear them. Cause yeah, you could seek it out, but these stories don't come to you. Like they don't come to you packaged like we can, you know, and they don't get followed by discussion like we can give you. So, you know, if this is interesting to you, if you're wondering about what the deal is, where next time you use a cell phone, if there's a crook somewhere nearby that the police are tracking, whether you want to know whether your cell phone is being dragged in on that, excuse me, or if your texts are being intercepted, if you're concerned about that, then that may be another reason to support KPFT at 713-526-5738. And that's the news.
Well, we've got some bad news for you, Pete. Your news really just drove people to pledge.
they turned away from their radios and they wanted to hear a volunteer more than they wanted to hear me.
They really did.
I can live with that.
Okay, so we've got to go out to Pledge Central and get some what appears to be some fantastic news for this evening.
Hey. So we do have some good news. I got to send a big thank you out to Matthew all the way out in Katy. Matthew swooped in and said, hey, really enjoys the program a lot, and especially this new format, and dropped down not one, not two, not three, four Benjamins down on the table.
What?
Wow, yeah. So big
fan. Thank you, Matthew.
Dropped it down on the fantastic plastic, no less, so helping us out in a big, big way. Hey, that's interesting. Matthew, if you want to call us back and you wanted a gift here, since you're dropping this all down, we have tickets. We have all kinds of really cool stuff that's available.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe you don't want a gift at all, so that's perfectly fine, too. We are, by the way, before I mention a bunch of gifts that you can still get if you want to pre-pledge to help us out for next week, we are partnered with a group called Children at Risk, which does a show with us. They are working in coalition with a lot of groups that are combating human trafficking in Houston. And if you decide you don't want to pledge a gift at all and you want to support the Traffic Stop campaign, there's an anonymous donor that has matched Children at Risk up to $80,000 to support the efforts to end human trafficking in Houston. So that's a really great thing, and you can help out with that. Or if you'd like to get a gift as well, you're certainly welcome to those. We have them, and we're happy to give them to you. So 713-526-5738. If you want to help us out for today and help out toward next week too, by all means, because next week will be our final edition for the campaign, 713-526-5738. Jay, big thumbs up, rousing success to all of y'all, because people really liking the show and helping us out and making the goal.
Yes, everybody was really, really awesome to make those pledges and help us make the goal. So we're going to stop. We're going to go out of active fundraising mode and go into passive fundraising mode. Obviously, if we can exceed the goal and go beyond it, it doesn't hurt, because KPFT actually, you know, it's not just about this dollar amount that we set, and it's not arbitrary. We don't say, here's the amount of money we want to raise. Okay, we've raised it. Hooray. That money goes towards very real expenses that the station incurs to be able to broadcast here in the fourth largest city in the nation. So when you pledge, it's not just about making the goal, which is very exciting and very encouraging, but that money actually goes to pay the light bill, goes to pay the rent on the transmitter tower. It goes to make minor repairs to keep this outdated equipment functioning.
Yep.
To broadcast all the variety and all the different things you get to hear on KPFT in the course of a week. So if you can afford to support KPFT, this is the time to do it. Going over, making more money than we expected, these are problems that we love to have. So if you want to be a part of that, if you want to be a part of the ongoing success and flourishing of KPFT and Technology Bites, please, by all means, go to the phone and dial 713-526-5738 or go to kpft.org online and hit the tip jar and make a pledge that way. I'm hoping we'll have some web pledges to thank next week.
Yep.
When we hear about people that have gone online and made those pledges. But right now, we're over the goal. We said that if we made the goal or went over, that we would go out of active fundraising and into passive fundraising and just do a regular show. So we'd like to do that for you tonight. Thanks to everyone who called in and pledged to make that happen. 45 minutes into the show, we were there, and that leaves us an hour and 15 to go here at KPFT and on Technology Bites. So we're going to do that.
Let's do it.
Let's do that. Especially with Barrett and Groovehouse out of the way, we can have a good show.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
The truth comes out.
It's been a long time since there's been a fundraiser that was worthy of putting up on the podcast. And last week's show went up on the podcast, and I think this week's show is going to go up on the podcast. So awesome for that. So I know Pete had done a little pre-show prep, and I haven't had a chance to.
No, I'm looking at it right now. There's good stuff in here. We got all kinds of stuff we can hit.
Yeah, and it is up on the, you know, if you're wanting to follow the links, if you want to read more about what we've already talked about or what we might talk about during the show, if you just go to geekradio.com, it's right on the front page.
Woo! And a neat front page it is.
That way you can, you know, that way even if we had needed to take a little longer to get the pledges in, you could have, like, made up your own show.
So you hit the other news stuff in there, but we didn't get to the bite of the apple. If you want to try some of that,
Yeah, that one, we finally are starting to get Apple rumors again. I didn't put it in this week's, but CNET has already put out the first, what do we know so far about the iPhone 6S?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, WWDC, Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, is coming up in June. It's June, I think. And that's when they usually drop some big something or others. We're actually expecting to hear about the next version of macOS. That's going to hopefully be the headliner. And so they already did last year with Yosemite. It was macOS 10 version 10.10. So it was macOS 10.10.10. So I'm kind of wondering, like, at what point here are we going to roll over and actually hit it? When are we going to go up to 11 with the macOS version?
But will it be 10.11 or will it It'll be OS 11?
Well, the branding is OS 10, but then they tack a version number. So it's OS, it's Macintosh OS 10 version 10. Whatever. And I think they're going to, I mean, it's so core to the identity and their branding at this point to have that 10 on there that they'll probably just kick it up to 11. I mean, they've been trying to sort of get away from having to say the version number because the version numbers are getting so ridiculous, and they've gone with these, you know, their set of code names. Like the first one was breaking away from the big cat code names. The first one was Mavericks. That was 10.9, 10.10, Yosemite. These are all named out of for like famous California locations. So we're wondering what, you know, 10.11 is going to be. They haven't leaked yet. I'm curious to see what they're going to come up with.
I think it's going to be, they're going to go to water mammals. It's going to be, or big Lebowski references. OS 10 marmot. One of the rumors, one of the things for WWDC, and apparently supplies of Apple TV, you know, they lowered the price a few months ago on Apple TV because they haven't refreshed it in quite a while.
This is not, just for listeners who aren't necessarily familiar, this is not a television. This is the Apple TV little set-top box they have. Is it a set-top box? I guess you could put it on top.
Yeah, they're little kind of Roku, kind of Roku type box.
Yeah, kind of a hockey puck thingy, yeah. Roku kind of thingy.
And the rumors are starting to come out about what that next generation box, there have been rumors, just to keep it extra confusing, there have been rumors of a television set from Apple. That is not, those have kind of disappeared, and I haven't seen any associated with the WWDC. So this is a new Apple TV box.
You know, that rumory stuff was going on when Steve Jobs was still alive.
All right, so
right?
here's a little bit of tech journalism inside baseball. Every quarter when Apple does their quarterly earnings call, everybody listens into the Apple quarterly earnings call. If you're a tech journalist, even if you're not actively participating, you listen because that's when Apple announces. For the past year, it's been, you know, record earnings, blah blah blah. But there's an analyst with I forget the firm, it may be Piper Jeffries, but it's a fellow named Gene Munster. And every quarter for like 8 quarters running without fail, when it was Gene's turn to ask, Tim Cook and Luca Maestri and all of the Apple guys, his question, when the virtual mic went to him, he would ask about like Apple television. He'd be like, "Hey guys, it's Gene. Any news on Apple television this quarter?" And like, it got to be like you could set your clock by like, "Oh, here comes Gene, gonna ask about Apple TV again." And like this quarter, this last earnings call, which was just last Monday, I think, he didn't ask about it. It was like, and everyone was like, "You're not gonna ask about the Apple TV, Gene, what's wrong?" And yeah, like you said, it's kind of faded. There's been no Apple television news or rumors. Which probably means they're about to release one and take everybody's surprise.
Yeah, they'll have a whole line of them. But on the box, the rumor that's come out, the thing, you know, the box itself is going to be nondescript and small and so on. And you can guess on the specs. It's like bump up the processor. There's rumors about a new operating system that'll have more of an iTunes, you know, an app store kind of thing. The biggest thing, and if you've ever seen them, Apple has had little remotes with some of the iMacs, and they had the same remote with the Apple TV.
Yeah,
it was a cool little remote. It originally was plastic, but then they went to an aluminum one.
Yeah, it's a neat little thing.
And it only has, basically, it has 3 buttons and a kind of circular touchpad, that does up, down, left, and right. So it's a very simple remote to manage the Apple TV. The only thing that's irritating, if one has done used either an Apple TV or I've even used like a PlayStation with their remote to like do Netflix, is when you're scrolling through all your options on TV shows or movies and stuff, using the little button and pressing it each time to make the thing advance is kind of irritating, frankly. And the rumor is that there's going to be a touchpad on the new remote, and that it will allow you to do scrolling like you do on a laptop, if you're using a Mac, that like the scrolling like you do on a touchpad on a Mac, so that you can scroll faster or slower, the same way you do on your desktop if you have a touchpad, or on your laptop.
I like that. I mean, you've always been able to use, for folks who have Macs, if you happen to have one of those little remotes, you've always been able to use them with Mac laptops to do, like, if you're doing a presentation or whatever, to do slide advancement and stuff, and even to do media playing. You can't use them on MacBook Airs, but on MacBooks and MacBook Pros you can. So this is neat. I mean, it's taking that extensibility story and adding it on to. That's really cool.
I can't use it on my Air.
So it could show up in June at the WWDC. The fact that there's not a big supply of, that it's starting to be 1 to 2 weeks availability on the Apple TV box. And then finally, you know, there's been rumors about Apple having an internet-based television service. And if there, you know, there's the possibility of a new Apple TV box combined with that service would be the kind of thing that would merit getting announced at WWDC. With the ongoing saga of the Apple Watch, just for those of you who are following it at home, Apple's preparing to offer in-store pickup options for Apple Watch in the United States and other launch countries. Listing the option is available soon on the Apple Online Store and Apple Store app. It's grayed out right now, but that it's getting ready to not be grayed out, so that you can click, so that you'll be able to click to pick it, have it shipped to the store where you can pick it up there. So if it's something where you've been waiting, if the whole idea is you want to go look at it in person and then pick it up that way and not have it shipped to you in July, I think is the current shipping window, then that's coming. And finally, on Apple rumor stuff, this one is not so much Apple tied. It's iOS, it's tied to iOS, but I think it's a trend thing that's more interesting, which is Volkswagen today announced that it's joining the ranks of companies offering an Apple Watch app to go along with its broader mobile services. VW's CarNet service, which debuted in 2014, has offered services like remote control of climate settings, checking if you left your windows open or where you parked, fuel battery monitoring. Those things are all available for both the iOS and Android platforms. One other feature that goes with it is the idea of speed and boundary alerts on your Apple Watch. With this, users could set up alerts when a specific driver in the family exceeds a set speed cap or leaves a certain location boundary. You can customize these notifications to take as much or as little priority, you know, as far as telling you as you want. Another potential feature for the iOS app could be remote unlocking from the watch for cars from the 2016 model year. So basically, you can, you know, that means you could act as like OnStar for, you know, your significant other or your kids or someone that, you know, or if you have your phone and you lock your keys in the car, you can unlock it using your Android or iOS device to unlock the doors or pop the trunk using your watch or that without having to dig for the keys or, of course, if you've forgotten them or lost them in some way. More details will be coming out as they become available, but, you know, the way that these integrate more with your life and tie to your car and your wearable and your phone and all of that is something that's been a long time coming, and it's kind of cool to watch it happen.
It feels very Star Trek, being able to like talk into your wrist and make your car do stuff. That's really cool. I'm still not wholly sold on the Apple Watch concept. I mean, I still think that the fact that you have to tie it to a smartphone and it really doesn't do a whole lot on its own is problematic. I don't think we're quite there yet. Now, you give me a smartwatch that doesn't require a smartphone to be tethered to it, which that's probably in that 3 to 5 year away bucket that everything really cool is in. Like, everything really cool is in 3 to 5 years. 3 to 5 years away, scientists expect.
But do you think that kind of expectation on the Apple Watch is due to what we've come to know from Apple with their mobility stuff, or would you have said the same thing about the first iPhone?
No, well, that's an interesting question. No. I think that each form factor should be able to stand on its own. And I've got the same criticism with every smartwatch, with the Moto 360, which honestly I think looks better than the Apple Watch, and maybe that makes me a heathen or whatever, that I don't buy into the beauty of the Apple Watch's perfect form factor. I like the Moto 360 better. That's the round one. I think there are better looking smartwatches, but you know.
We're being informed with hand signals and gestures.
Frantic waving from the booth.
That it's the top of the hour. We want to remind you that you're listening to KPFT Houston, the name of this show, the ever successful fundraising behemoth juggernaut, Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Lee.
And he's Lee. All right, so back to the Moto Watch.
It has to. I think all of these things should be able to stand on their own as self-contained devices, and most of them. I mean, they do neat things, but what it all comes down to, what every smartwatch comes down to, at least today, is they echo notifications up onto your wrist, and that's really all. And they do some other neat little things.
Like a Wi-Fi expander.
Kind of. Yeah.
What about the antennas, though?
Well, that's what I mean. That's why there's like that. It's 3 to 5 years away. We're not there yet. I don't think you need the battery density, you need the computing power, you need the space to have the antennas. I mean, you know, there's only so much
battery life
in
there so that it can support a full Bluetooth connection to a headset.
Right. And it's got to last all day. It absolutely has to last all day if it's a watch. If it's on your wrist, you can't just be like, well, hold on, I'm sitting down at my desk, let me just unbuckle this, or flop my wrist onto the desk charger and leave it there for 6 hours while I work.
You're very good at flopping your wrist,
just
I should point
flop
out.
Flop it. Flop the wrist down there.
That's the floppiest wrist I've seen.
If you're doing it in a watch form factor, you've got to have it to where it lasts a minimum of, I don't know, 15 hours, you know, minimum of maybe even longer. It's got to go from, you know, when you leave the house, you put your watch on, you go to work. If you work out of the house, you stay gone all day and you come home 6-7 o'clock at night, and you don't want to have to like have your watch die in the middle of the day. And that's right now. Ooh. The longest lasting smartwatches are, well, the longest lasting was last a few days. There was one Qualcomm did called the Talk. TOQ Talk, that has a like a weird Mirasol display that lasts several days. But the smartwatches that you want to buy and use, like the Moto 360 or the Apple Watch, they last about a day, and that's it. That's all you can do.
So with the regular wristwatch,
yeah,
when that came out, I think the first technological revolution of a watch was the self-winding watch.
Yes.
You know, the motion of just walking actually wound the watch. So now they need to come up with a self-winding digital watch that has a little tiny generator so that when you move, it actually spins up a little.
Maybe it can have like two needles and it lives off of your bioelectric energy. And jam it into your wrist.
And the nice part with a smartwatch is then Siri can like nag you. Faster, faster, chubby, I'm running out of charge.
I need more energy, Dave.
Your blood
I'm sort of surprised.
stop drinking so much, Dave.
I don't feel so good.
Well, it already does kind of nag you a little bit. The my coworker Andrew, who's our Apple guy, who has his Apple Watch, he says it's actually gets really annoying. You can turn the notifications off, but by default it pings you like every few hours, and it's like, hey, you haven't gotten up from your chair in like 4 hours. fatty, why don't you go outside? It's, you know, come on, man.
Well, which is extra irritating. I don't know if I read it from him or someone else, but said, you know, when you're in the middle of a movie, so you're sitting in a dark theater,
like,
and suddenly your watch lights
you
up
go outside
and tells you you should be walking.
Quit watching a movie, fatty.
And it doesn't detect that you're, you know, I don't know, seeing the Avengers or whatever. But yeah, the thing with the you know, one thing is Apple, obviously they raise everybody's expectations very high, even with on a specific product. But, you know, the other thing is that we go by the mature versions of all the products they've had before. You know, we've talked about it where the, you know, the MacBook Air was interesting but had some compromises, and there's sort of a version of that right now with the new MacBook with the Retina display. But they really don't get their – it's usually the second or third version of something before it really gets to sort of the full coolness of what Apple does on anything that's a brand new type approach. I mean, obviously on laptops, they kind of revolutionized laptops about four times. And the first ones out of the chute were good, but I'm kind of surprised in thinking back on it though, that the Apple Watch, I haven't seen one in person yet. But it does seem like it's kind of large and thick for an Apple product.
You know, okay, so I wanna stop just for a second. I wanna ask you guys who have been doing Technology Bytes since we mentioned the Windows 95 launch. I wanna ask you kind of a philosophical question. So, Jay, absolutely, and Peter, cast your mind back. Would you have thought even 10 years ago that we'd be spending this much time discussing Apple as a main center technological company?
I think that's always been a dream for Pete. I mean, you have to know the history of Pete's involvement with Technology Bytes. When he arrived at the radio station, when I first met him, said Pete wanted to, you know, when I mentioned in my previous show that I wanted to do Technology Bytes. Pete was a listener of my previous show.
What was your previous show?
Radio X. Not Radio X, so Radio Drome.
Radio X was the secret show.
No, Radio X is what Technology Bytes started out as.
Oh, okay.
So Radio Drome.
Right up until he got a lawyer letter about it.
From somebody who was squatting on Radio X. But
that's funny.
So I mentioned during Radio Drome, which was a late night talk show, was very Art Bell before Art Bell kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Movie. You told me about this. Yeah.
And I mentioned that, you know, I'm thinking, you know, because I just like have casual conversations with my listeners. I'd say, you know, this computer thing is really kind of taken off. And I'm thinking I may be changing the format to talk about computers and stuff. And Pete calls me and says, I want to be a part of it. And I don't even know. I don't even know who Pete is.
Like, who the hell are you?
So Pete, you know, volunteers and I'm like, okay, I don't think I can do this by myself. I need to have, you know, because I don't even know how it's going to go. We're going to open up. I don't know what's coming. But Pete shows up at the radio station with, what was the computer? Was it a G3 or a G1? Or
it was a Power Mac 7100.
Power Mac 7100.
That was with the what, like G3 processor or something like that. It was that.
No,
the Power PC.
Yeah, no, it'd be a Power PC something or other. It'd be one of the. It wasn't one of the tower ones, was it?
It was
no. It was a regular desktop type form.
Yeah,
it was still big. It was big, and he brought that in. And
yeah,
he
Power
brought,
PC.
And
yeah.
He brought that in with a CRT monitor, big old CRT monitor.
Wow.
And it had a modem in it. And we hardwired into the phone lines here.
Oh, wow.
And dialed into Flex.net, I think it was, is where he had his – he worked for them as a
guess
webmaster.
He didn't have Wi-Fi back then.
No. No, but we had to tie up a phone line just to – you know, that was a concern because we're going to do a talk show. So we had to tie up a phone line with a modem and dialed into Flex.net and got, you know, dial-up access.
Mm-hmm.
And – That was my introduction to Pete, and then Pete's been an evangelist for Apple forever. He came in. You did have a Newton. I do remember this correctly, right?
Yeah,
a Newton.
Yeah,
yeah.
So. Oh wow!
I spoke at a deal for the FM 1960 PC Users Group around in the late 90s. They invited me out to speak,
the dark times for Apple. That whole, like, the Gil Emilio years, that whole 94, 95 through 97, 98, that was like, is this company going to fold kind of years.
Right. Well, that, and It was all this stuff that Apple was trying to do, but I mean, there was none of that, you know, that beautiful, sleek form factor. Of
no, anything. It was 10,000 different Centrises and Quadras, and it was a wreck.
The Apple Newton was just an intelligent Nintendo football game, as far as it had that same kind of clunky form factor. You know,
although the thing I said at my presentation, and I wish I had taped it because it would be one of those things that would be good to have to throw up there. I said, look, if the Newton can do this, you know, this isn't a form factor that I can carry around that's not, you know, it wasn't tiny. I mean, it was, if you've seen one, it's about it was the size of, I don't know, it was a good inch thick and probably 8 inches tall by 5 inches wide kind of thing. And I said, but imagine, you know, going forward, you know, I'm able to carry a certain amount of data, this information. Imagine this with a color screen, you know, imagine it with where you have more memory, where you have more capacity to carry your documents around and those kinds of things, which it, you know, I didn't think about, oh, well, imagine it was a cell phone. Cause I wasn't thinking on those lines, but it's the iPhone.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it was what the iPhone came to be and the iPad after it. And so there were the hints of those kinds of things that they were doing. And then, of course, there was it hit it because when Steve Jobs came back, the first thing he did was nuke the Newton. He didn't like it.
Well, that's
it
not
was,
all he nuked. He didn't like it because that was John Scully's thing. And he hated John Scully.
But back then, my thought about Apple was that, you know, they're in schools or an educational thing. My band's second album, my fiddle player did the artwork, hand drew the artwork, and we scanned it in to a digital format and went to Kinko's to use one of their Power Macs to edit it in Photoshop. And even then it was so slow and so horrible, but it was always thought that Mac was kind of in this niche and that's kind of where they were going to stay. And I never really thought that we would be like, they dominate as much as they are right now.
Oh, and I was on, I mean, in the mid 90s to late 90s, that was when I was in my big bulletin board phase, you know, flaming Apple every chance I got, or on the 713 BBS scene, and on Usenet when I finally got internet access in 1995, figured out how Usenet worked. Like, oh, this is all new places to go and wage the Mac versus PC holy war that I'm so good at. I bring it up because it's fascinating to watch. You know, we've got this entire section of the show that we're talking about Apple stuff, and the reason why is because I think, you know, if you've been around for a long time, and I know this is true for me, you kind of exist in this perpetual state of shock when every once in a while you kind of stop what you're doing and think that, oh my gosh, I'm using a Mac. Everybody, look around, everybody's using a Mac, everybody's got an iPhone, and this is from, you know, this is not anything that I think anybody would have anticipated, even the most diehard Apple faithful, when looking at how the company was so far down in the 90s. The winds have shifted, and it's just fascinating to see. And now, not just, you know, not only are they an important company, I mean, they've got, their market share still isn't huge. They're still well under 10% on the desktop laptop side of things. They're not the dominant mobile vendor in the world, but they are, from a, you know, market cap perspective, they're the biggest company that exists. They have 187, as of their last quarterly earnings call, $187 billion in cash reserves, which is, I mean, literally enough to build a base on the far side of the moon and have their own, like, fleet of Apple space shuttles. I mean, it's ludicrous how far they've come. It's just, so they, that's why
Google
we're spending
and
so much
all
time
those,
talking
yeah,
about
it. Yeah, as Google and all those other companies were rising up, nobody would have thought, including me, that Apple would be kind of in the running with them now, you know, in 2015, that Apple would be in the running with them to be the first, you know, potentially trillion-dollar company.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not, you know, and this is not in any, you know, not meant to be like an endorsement.
No, of course
not. Or anything of Apple. But, you know, when you're talking about tech news, you have to pay attention to who the players are and what they're doing. And, of course, Technology Bites, we have a sense of history. So I think it's interesting to reflect on the way that the technological landscape ebbs and flows. I have a PC at work, and it does what I need it to do, and I'm very glad to have it. I'm all about, you know, having the right tool for the right job. So I've choose technology with the with the knowledge that I have to be able to do the things that I want to use technology for. And that's a far cry from when my first computer, you know, I just got one because I thought it'd be cool to have one. And of course, it didn't work. And then when it did work, it didn't do anything. And you know, I was stunned by the monochrome graphics display. But I was very interested in VGA quickly. But you know, here on Technology Bites, we have our preferences, but they're not in any way meant to influence your preferences. I've always, and when you mentioned your whole Apple versus PC thing.
Oh, that was my thing, man.
I hate brand loyalty for the sake of brand loyalty.
Yes.
I mean, whether it's Apple versus PC or Canon versus Nikon or Fender versus Gibson, you know, you pick a tool or a gadget and you like it and it does good things for you, you should enjoy that. And if someone else picks something else and it's different...
Kill them. No, I mean, don't kill them.
They should be allowed to enjoy their thing, you know. I do know that technology is a status symbol, or can be seen as a status symbol. People have a phone, an iPhone or an Android phone, and they have it to demonstrate that that's the clan that they belong to, or that's the newsletter they subscribe to. But here at Technology Bites, that's not what we're about. It's not about like, oh, except unless you use Palm, then you know you're right.
That's a little culty. Yeah.
Well, some of it is that right now at this point in time, Apple seems to be the one that pushes the envelope forward more often, and so we follow that a little closer because nobody said, you know, look at the description of the latest kind of the latest thin laptops. Inevitably, they get compared to the MacBook Air because that was the one that put that stake in the ground for that whole category of computing. The iPhone gets compared with the, you know, all the new smartphones get compared with the iPhone and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, like y'all were talking about the whole, like, you know, we have to watch Apple or talk about Apple because of where they're at. But the thing is, to me, like, okay, I was a Mac hater. The first time I got really beyond that was probably in 96 when I was forced by my job to start to use a Mac because I took over for a guy doing computer models and the models were all on a Mac. And so, you know, and it worked. And the people that had PCs, which I had come from one, had problems and it didn't. And I still wasn't going to go buy one, but I was like, you know what? I guess I wasn't really... right, hating these things so much because they really do function and they are pleasant to use, you know. Yeah. And but I wasn't going to get one. But the thing is,
until now,
because they were expensive,
well, yeah.
One thing, and also I just still was a PC user. But the thing is, even through all that time, and even with all the like hype and marketing, I mean, Apple's almost always been really good at spinning their products and making them, you know, palatable to at least a certain segment of people. But even outside of that, I mean, they, as a company, except with a few dark periods, have tended to either push the envelope of what's out or go in a different direction. And, you know, sometimes that didn't work well for them. but they all, it seemed like they've almost always done something interesting.
Well, there's a fascinating book I'd recommend anybody pick up. It's by Andy Hertzfeld. I may have mentioned this in the program before. He's one of the programmers. He did the ROM programming on the original Macintosh in the early 80s, 83 and 84 was when he spent time at Apple. The book is called Revolution in the Valley, and it's his discussion of his time at Apple. It's sort of a series of anecdotes. And the fascinating thing about it is it reads like the kind of stuff you would hear coming out of any modern internet startup, talking about the hours worked and the sense of accomplishment and listening to Steve Jobs drive the team forward and the, you know, the good things and the bad things about it. Everything feels like it's all part of a cycle, which actually I kind of wanted to mention too. We've been talking about Apple here, but speaking of cyclical things, you know, in the 90s, I would have said Microsoft was massively ascendant in the PC scene. And that has shifted to where Apple, I think, has overshadowed them because they've had a series of missteps, even though in the corporate market, Microsoft has always been dominant. But honestly, looking at some of the stuff that Microsoft has been doing out of the conference they had last week, their Build conference, looking at the VR stuff they've got with HoloLens, which if you guys haven't read about, is absolutely amazing. You should watch some of the demo videos. The changes they're doing from a development standpoint to make Windows easier to use. I'm actually, for the first time in a long time, to kind of bring this around, excited about a lot of the stuff I'm seeing Microsoft doing. And 9 years ago, when I jumped ship and went to the Mac platform, I was very, very disheartened with what I saw Microsoft doing. I think this is really good. It's a good time to be in technology. There's all kinds of cool stuff happening.
And plus, Google's come in from a very different angle than either of those players, right? And they're doing some interesting things as well, but coming from a very different perspective.
Yeah. That's neat, man. There's all kinds of cool stuff going on.
Yeah, there's plenty new stuff. There's plenty happening and coming. And frankly, I think that just like when we started, part of, you know, the internet had just started when the show just started to be something that people thought about having possibly
at home.
It's just
been recently deregulated by Al Gore.
Tim Berners, yes. I was going to say Tim Berners-Lee put the World Wide Web on.
91, I think.
It was 92.
I saw my first web page in 93.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I swear it was 92. Anyway,
you know, you look at how it was 91. Appears and then spreads through our entire society. Now, one thing I saw, it didn't make it to where it'd be on the news for a tighter night, like a pledge night, but they're over half the households in the country stream television shows to their other devices or to their TVs. In other words, they use the internet to get not as the sole source, but they at least once have streamed a show to their TV or their computer.
That's kind of amazing. That's like
the media delivery model's changing.
That's like the, you know, remember those AT&T commercials from the 90s, those You Will commercials? They were all like, well, you know, one day you might do, and they were cool commercials. YouTube's got all of them up there, but like streaming, you know, being able to watch any movie you want on demand was always like kind of one of those things about like, you know, you're living in the future when this happens. Well, it's actually sort of creeped up on us, but we're kind of there. I mean, with the exception of if you're a big fan of live sports, I mean, other than that, there's really not a whole lot that you can't do legally even with streaming TV and streaming movies.
We were talking at work today about we were having one of those when I was a kid kind of conversations.
We're getting there here.
And, remember downloading like a 500K or 1 meg zip file?
Yes.
And watching the lines draw across as the image was being downloaded?
For, yes. Four to 16 hours?
The quick rule of thumb was at 2400 BPS, you would get 1K every 5 seconds, and 100K took 8 minutes. That's the quick rule of thumb that I still remember. It's one of those useless things. Like, I don't remember that until the day I die.
Well, just because you might want to, you know, think about how long you have to go get something to eat or pay off your mortgage.
How long to sleep.
Yeah. let's see. I need to go run out. I guess
someday old Lee is going to be, you know, sitting in his hover chair. With
Remember when the watch used to tether to the phone?
You can't.
He's going to mention it. He's going to mention it in a hologram conversation with them because they'll be on Mars. And he'll say that stat, and they'll go, "How many petabytes is that?"
Yeah, K. What's a K?
Remember when you joked about having the phone power off your bioenergy?
Yeah, it's funny.
We're really
I remember
on the
when I had bioenergy.
we're at the beginning of there's a lot more change coming. And that's part of why the show, you know, there's been times over the years where Jay and I, you know, we've had the conversation where you kind of go, well, what's okay, how much is sort of left here? You know, when it was looking like perhaps it might become an entirely Microsoft world and all that, where you kind of go, well, you know, at some point it's not gonna, you know, we weren't gonna be Pravda.
That was a real
just
thing. I mean, that, yeah, you mentioned that. That's not like, you know, idle joking. I mean, there was that period, especially in, you know, 96, 97, 98, you know, like, is this really gonna be, it's gonna be like the crazy Unix guys and Microsoft. That's what it looked like it was gonna come down to.
And so, you know, we wondered how much road there was left for the show. And now it seems to me that it's kind of like opening up to a whole nother, you know, it's getting farther and farther into people's lives as far as the technology and how it works and what you have to understand and know about how to use it. And so, you know, hooray for us, as long as we keep getting the pledges.
One of the reasons why, you know, it came time to retool the show is, you know, one of the things I was wondering was, like, you know, how long can you continue giving out tech support and have that be viable? Because people are dealing with technology now that, unlike when I first got into it, actually works.
and when it does break, breaks spectacularly.
Right. But I mean, you can pretty much count on the fact that you could go and buy a smartphone or a tablet or a laptop or a desktop, and you're going to turn it on, and it's going to do what it's supposed to do. I mean, there's still problems. You're still going to encounter issues. But if you're running up-to-date modern technology, chances are it's going to function as intended. So really, when I was a kid, you not only had to know how to use a computer, you had to know how to fix a computer.
Because you couldn't just Google it.
Right.
There
weren't no Google. But so, you know,
hadn't found none of them Googles yet.
And I wasn't sure how the show is going to keep up with now that technology is so ubiquitous, or however you say that word.
I say ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous? Yeah. It's me-biquitous. Or yes. So, you know, it is out there, and it's been fun over 20 years to watch the evolution of how technology has impacted our lives, because, you know, now today everything is all the Twitters, it's the smartphones, it's the iPods and things like that. I remember Pete was talking about his moment when he was talking about the Newton and, like, you know, being able to having that moment where he was kind of predicting the future. Imagine this in color. Imagine.
Yeah.
I remember, like, way before that, like in the 80s, thinking, you know, in the 90s, thinking that eventually you're going to get to a point where all of your music is going to be contained in a box about the size of a loaf of bread.
Wow.
And then that's
actually really big. That'd have a lot of terabytes in it.
Back then, you know.
Nowadays, that'd be a 12-terabyte RAID.
But the idea of having, you know, at that time, I had a record library that was over 3,000 albums. So I was just trying to consider all those milk crates and cinder blocks that were holding up my record albums, all that compressed into just a small box. And now it's even small. It's the size of a vote for Nixon pen, you know. Tiny.
Well, and the other odd thing, you know, that you know, when music went, like, you know, you got to CDs, and then music started to get online, there was this idea that the record companies could, you know, they thought they had this nailed. They were going to lock it down, and they would own it, and you'd pay for every single individual listen to a song. You'd have access to a lot more songs, but you'd pay, you know, a nickel every time I heard a song, and you'd see the dollar signs in their eyes. Well, now look at it. You can go, and there's all these places that you can stream all the current music for free. You have access to just about everything that's recorded that's been digitized. When you go on, what, like Pandora and all those, you can get at huge amounts of music. And they don't, you know, it doesn't cost you anything.
Although, unfortunately, it doesn't really help the artist that much either.
No.
I say they're still trying to go back to
subscriptions. But they don't have the kind of a lock on it that they thought they would. I mean, it's gone someplace that neither the people who thought that everything was going to be ripped and put on Napster for free everywhere for forever weren't right, and neither were the record executives.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, who would have imagined a day where we'd be sitting in the radio station and I'd be watching Barrett real time upload photos to a web page where I can see him touring around Italy on his motorcycle.
It's pretty impressive.
You know, it's like that whole in the moment. You know, I remember thinking with the internet, even BBS is thinking, I am having a conversation over wires with people in another part of the world.
Yeah.
And to me, at least back then, I thought people were going to be really interesting and intelligent to talk to. But I found out, you know, the internet has taught me that people all over the world are just as pedantic and tiresome.
Well, the just weird sort of futuristic kind of thing. Because I remember, I guess there was, you know, there was 2001 A Space Odyssey, and then there was the follow-up movie, the 2010.
Peter Hyams.
Spaceballs.
Yes.
And it had, you know, Ray Scheider, and he was at his house, which had, you know, like dolphins.
He had the big screen. Cool.
He had a lot of stuff that we don't really yet have in 2010, sadly. Arthur Clarke is still ahead of the world.
But
it's easier to imagine it than do it.
I know.
But the thing with the kid, you know, was talking. The other day I got up and my daughter, you know, I went to tell her it's time to go to school. And she was using her computer and she was on Skype. And so she finished her talking with her friend. And as we were walking down for her to go out to catch the bus, you know, I asked her where her friend was, and her friend is in Taiwan.
Well, you better hope her friend's
she
in
met
Taiwan.
This person. She's never seen this person face to face. She met him on, it's another child her age.
Assuming okay. All right. Yeah. I was going to say it could be some 60-year-old guy.
And it's kind of hard to do that on Skype.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're talking. So she was having a conversation, you know, when I was a kid, you know, you thought about it was hard to get phone time to call your friend who lived, you know, three blocks away.
And my parents would have killed me if I called Taiwan.
Let alone. But so she was having a conversation with her friend. And, you know, of course, there's only certain times a day where they're both awake, you know, because of being on the other side of the planet.
With the 2010 reference, what I thought you were going to say is that Roy Scheider's house had all this cool stuff and he had dolphins. But there was a scene on Earth before he gets on board the Leonov and flies off when he's training for the space mission, where he's on the beach, like showing that in the future, you know, you don't have to be tethered to the office. And he's sitting in the beach working on, after seeing all this amazing like future stuff at his house, he's working on this like very dated looking, like compact luggable with a flip up monochrome screen, and he's typing on this thing, and it's supposed to be, you know, all futuristic because he's you know, working on the beach, which I guess when the movie came out in 84, really wasn't all that common to do back then. But yeah, it's hard for movies to have to be able to predict stuff like that, you know, accurately. A lot of times movies don't go far enough with what they're, especially in the 80s, with what the 80s were envisioning the future to be like, didn't quite take it all the way. Well, so that was a really great digression. We killed a lot of time on that one, but I was hoping, looking at the show prep, there's one thing I really wanted to talk about. It's under the try, buy, or fry list. And I sort of mentioned it tangentially with the Microsoft HoloLens thing. And that is that, this week, speaking of things about the future that we got totally wrong in movies, the consumer version of Oculus's Rift virtual reality headset finally has a
release date,
semi-solid release date of Q1 2016. Now this thing is, listeners who may not be familiar with the history of Oculus Rift. The Oculus Rift was originally a kickstarted project to make a VR headset, but not a crappy VR headset, like a really, really good VR headset, like the kind of thing that we wanted to get in the 90s, but never actually could get. And then they were super ridiculously successful in crowdfunding, and they last year were picked up by Facebook, who bought them for many billions of dollars. They've released developer models of this thing. So they, a couple of years ago, they first put out their first set of developer models, the Oculus Rift DK1, Developer Kit 1, which was kind of low resolution, but was absolutely revolutionary. And everybody that tried one on and played, you know, Counter-Strike or Half-Life or whatever with this, you know, VR headset on, said that it was amazing. Yeah. What's that from?
Have you seen the new, the online Community? Version of Community?
No.
When the dean gets a virtual reality
no.
system?
Jay's pulling up YouTube videos. And then they released a second developer version, the DK2, just last year. And I ended up buying one. You can buy these for, they're $350. And being totally irresponsible and addicted to technology, I bought one of these things. And even though
it's still tied to a
computer. Even though it's still tied to a computer and it's still a developer model, it's low resolution. When you got this, you know, giant thing, it's not actually that big. When you got this thing strapped on your head that's like super fat ski goggles and you're looking at this display in front of you, you can see kind of the pixels because it's not like, you know, as high resolution as the consumer one's going to be. Even with all that, it is so absolutely amazing. I am so excited about the real version of this coming out and being able to use it. There's a game that I've been playing. Jay's heard me tweet about it, called Elite Dangerous. It's a spaceship game. If you played Elite in 1984, this is kind of a modern version of it. And it's got support for this VR headset. And it's absolutely the most incredible thing ever, because you're sitting, like, in real life, you're sitting in your chair in front of your computer with your joystick and stuff, because that's what you've got. That's what I've got. And then you put the Rift on, and the first impression is, when you get this thing on and you're sitting in your spaceship cockpit, wow, this is kind of low resolution and crappy. But it's got head tracking and positional tracking, and you kind of look to your left. Well, that's my right. You kind of look to your left, and then you look to your right, and, like, in front of you,
you do the hokey pokey.
You see, like, looking to your left, and you look around in your spaceship cockpit, and you look out your window, and you can, like, look behind you and look up, and you, like, launch out into space. It's absolutely the most immersive, incredible thing that I have. You know, I've been playing games for a long time, and this is the first thing in a long time that has made me absolutely drop my jaw, say holy crap, and just absolutely blew my mind. So I am super excited about this thing coming out. I will be the first in line to buy one. And to further my flying through space adventures. It is the neatest thing. And anybody who grew up watching movies and TV in the 90s, virtual reality was supposed to be like the thing, right? I mean, we had, it seemed like for a period of time in there, like that was all that was on everything. Everything was virtual reality this, virtual reality that. There was the Lawnmower Man movie, of course, that my parents didn't want me to watch, with good reason. And I mean, virtual reality was like the, like, trend that was supposed to revolutionize not just computing, but like healthcare and everything all at the same time was all going to be VR revolution. It all just kind of collapsed because everybody realized that it kind of sucked with the technology available in the 90s. It just did not work out. And I think while it's not going to be like a world revolutionizing, amazing thing, you know, next year when this thing comes out, and Oculus isn't the only company making headsets, it's all sort of hit this convergence point, and there are, Valve has one that's going to be coming out, HTC does, there's other companies too. I'm excited to see what it's going to turn into. I think finally the wheel has come round, and it's time for virtual reality to become a thing. That's my long virtual reality speech.
Well, I recommend
virtual reality will become real.
Yes, it will no longer be virtual.
I recommend that you go to Yahoo Screen and watch the episode of Community about the virtual reality system that that they got tricked into buying, and the scenes from inside of it, the actual virtual reality stuff. It's like, you know, he's just trying to, like, do things like delete a file. So he's got this file and he's cast it up in the sky. He's It's very, you know, 90s.
None of that actually works very well, actually, when you actually get those, like, 3D file managers or whatever. I mean, that's the thing. That's why it flopped so hard, is because everybody wanted to do everything in it. And it's, you know, it's like you said earlier, Jay, it's a question of right tool for right job. For games and stuff, absolutely cool. Maybe for some of the stuff that Microsoft was showing off with their HoloLens tech at Build last week, you know, and HoloLens is kind of an augmented reality, like overlaying stuff on top of your vision. And they had people, you know, with floating medical models on stage, poking and like manipulating hearts in real time. Like, all that stuff was so cool, and that works. That's not like, you know, trying to be Pierce Brosnan in the Lawnmower Man and like getting in a, I don't know, that movie was so terrible. Oh my God. Don't watch it.
And in those old movies where they blur the line between reality and virtual reality. So like the one with Russell Crowe where he was virtual perfect criminal and he comes out of it somehow.
Yes. Oh, I love that movie. That movie was so
all the
terrible.
Reality of weird science, all the realism of weird science, you know, the movie Weird Science, not the segment on the show.
Oh, that movie was so bad, but it was so good. I have such good memories of seeing that in the theater late at night with friends and throwing popcorn at the screen.
Well, and it may be, you know, he said fingers crossed, you know, hoping that it's not going to be a huge disappointment. You know, science fiction has kind of languished. I mean, you know, the dystopia, you know, Matrix, you know, where the science fiction future is horrible and you have to wake up from it and come to reality and so on, you know, with like the new the Star Trek reboot and with, you know, potentially a Star Wars that people want to watch coming out this fall. It could kind of bring a rebirth of that kind of, I guess, sort of more of a tech optimism again, where it's not all just grim and robot overlords and all that. It'll be cool VR stuff and, you know, getting closer to where we can have our own spaceships or whatever.
I'm down with that. Although there is a new Terminator movie coming out, and that's kind of a throwback to the robot overlords thing.
True, but that's a fun. There's still the tech was still kind of, you know, basically that was sort of like tech you wanted, some of the stuff they were showing with it. I must say,
cool, my own Terminator kind of tech. Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Yeah. Well, because the thing about how many of those there were several of the movies where that's kind of the thing where the kid, you know, where John Connor gets his own Terminator to do whatever he wants.
Beat up my bullies. That would be awesome.
But yeah, well, so that was one try by or fry, which I think that the clear
we're gonna buy the heck out of that.
Way towards the buy end, and you know, with a tinge of try, perhaps for some. Got a couple other ones, just quickies. There's one. This one's interesting, and the price is to be determined. So who knows? But it's called the Smart Flower Solar System, and the deal is instead of having a flat panel of solar cells that you put like on your roof, this thing is it looks kind of like a flower. It basically unfolds and it points itself at the sun. So it means you need fewer panels because it's going to get more, it's going to get power for as long as the sun is up.
No, I thought this thing was turn and face like, it. I thought this thing was like you put it on your desk, but I'm clicking through to their website.
No, this is like home scale.
This is like the size of your car kind of thing. It's enormous.
It's like a satellite dish size, yeah. And what happens is
it's not just a satellite dish size. This is like a UHF satellite dish.
At night, if it's windy, it folds up the panels so that they aren't damaged, and then it resets itself for where the sun's going to come up in the morning.
This is very cool. It's hard to describe. It's like it looks like a giant Dutch windmill kind of thing, actually.
yeah. And so, you know, the thing is, what it's doing is it's getting the most out of the cells it has on it because it's tracking the sun. It's pointing itself at the sun so that as the day goes along, it's constantly got the most surface facing the sun, as opposed to, you know, if you've ever looked at the things where they talk about putting solar panels on your roof, they talk about, you know, having a southern facing and some of that. Or you end up choosing which, you know, are you going to get more, are you going to put the panels where they get more sun in the afternoon or in the morning and things like that, where this, you don't have that problem. As long as there's a clear view of the sky where the sun's pointing at it, you're going to get stuff. And then the other thing that goes with that was the, which happened sort of in the middle where we couldn't go, where it didn't fit our news cycle, the Tesla announcement came out.
Yeah.
And that was that home battery. And the thing that was, I guess, interesting about it is, you know, we had talked about it a couple shows ago and thought that it might be something that was going to be over $10,000. It might be $13,000 or $14,000. It turns out it's a home battery, but it comes in multiple sizes that you can hook up multiples together. So whatever your level of need is, you buy multiple units. It hangs on the wall because these lithium batteries are obviously take up a lot less space than, you know, lead acid batteries. And it's about $3,000. It starts at about $3,000.
Yeah.
And it's set up to where you can either charge it off the power grid. So you could do, like we talked about, charge it at night, and then it, you know, augments your power in the afternoon when you need air conditioning or if the power goes out or those kinds of things. Or you could use it with solar.
Yeah.
And for 3,000 $1,000 as for one of the units that would run your house for probably in Houston with air conditioning and all of that, you're talking about that it's probably a couple, 2 or 3 hours.
Well, they said
that it would run it at night.
You can stack them. So they said you can have up to 9 right. of them in series. But there was some weird like there were some weird caveats about it. Like they come in the two flavors, the 10 kilowatt hour version and the 7 kilowatt hour version. But the 10 kilowatt hour version can only do a limited number of charges through its lifetime. It's like limited to 50 charges per year, and it doesn't have as large of an output capacity. So it's more of like a, I think its max output was like 2 kilowatt hours or something. So it's like a UPS basically. Whereas the
yeah,
one
for
that
your house.
Whereas the one that you'd use for a solar battery is the 7 kilowatt version, but you'd need more of them. And I don't know. I mean, it's like. They said, like, Musk got called out today on the Tesla earnings call about some of the foibles of this. Like, it's not just, like, one battery that does everything. It's you have to kind of pick, like, do you need to be repeatedly rechargeable or what? And he basically said that he's taking a global perspective and that in some of the U.S. where solar isn't everywhere and you have to charge off the grid or whatever, it may not be the most efficient solution. It may not work for you. So for us in Houston, for example, the obvious use case is, can I, you know, use this to power my house instead of a generator that's going to, you know, kill me with carbon monoxide or whatever if I don't use it inside? And no, it's not really meant for the use cases that we'd have here on the Gulf Coast. But if you're in, you know, like a Scandinavian country or somewhere in Europe or Asia or whatever, where you have vastly different utility layouts and situations, especially in Asia, where you may not have ultra reliable power or whatever, this kind of thing makes a lot more sense and is a lot more cheaper. So, or is a lot cheaper, not a lot more cheaper.
A lot more cheaper.
So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a global kind of product, and it doesn't necessarily, I mean, it's not really a panacea. And I mean, for us, I couldn't see using something like this unless I can pair it with solar. I mean, that seems like, because we already pay in Houston so little for electricity compared to
right.
some of the more elevated markets. What else are you going to do with it here?
If you got enough of them and strung them together, then you could get in front of them and take pictures and do reenactments of like 2001 or Aliens, because they kind of look like those like coffin pods that people sleep for like long-term hibernation in space.
The other thing with them that you know, obviously Musk's model, you know, when you talk about him looking at globally, is when you get to scale, and this is modular, I think his idea is if you imagine that there are millions or more of these units out there, that would change how the electricity grid worked. You know, you could take and frankly, like in Houston, while it doesn't work for an individual, you could see where a power company, you could smooth out your grid by picking the right users and mounting these batteries around your system in places where there's a problem, so that at night they charge up, and then at 5 o'clock in the afternoon when it's the hottest in July and people get home and they turn on their air conditioners, that you've got the extra juice kind of pre-distributed. It's almost like it'd almost be like a content distribution network for electricity, where you can pre-position power where you need it. Or if you're a person who, you know, that's an issue, you could do it individually. But the thing that this may be a mind changer even more than a game changer, because obviously they're going to keep producing batteries and they're trying to get that Moore's law thing going where the price goes down and the capability goes up, and they're going to have the capacity to produce. So it should help accelerate the availability of these kind of batteries and, you know, the things that you can do with them.
Then everybody have like a PowerTorrent client. And you can actually see where you're getting power from of all these different, like, you know, IPs of the different battery systems.
Neat.
So yeah, but it is so kind of new, because this one you don't have to do as much. I don't want to oversimplify it, you know, Lee was talking about kind of, you know, there's some aspects of this that make it a little more complicated to use, but the kind of basic install, put it in and hook it up to use, is a lot simpler than the kind of other things that have been out there before. And so that will help make a difference over time. So it's certainly something that's going to be worth keeping an eye on.
Lead acid batteries are not enjoyable to deal with for that kind of stuff.
Do not want.
Yeah, no, they're not the future there.
It's cheaper until it kills you.
Well, and when you end up spending half your time just maintaining the batteries and swapping out the deads, and you know, lead acid batteries are like the goldfish of batteries.
Yeah, I've never worked with that, but I've heard of people talking about dealing with that in like large server farms or whatever, where they have a whole, you know, big banks of those. And yeah, there are people who that's what they do all day, is just check the water levels and then just pull them out and put in new ones, trade them out for ones that die.
The battery guy.
that sounds like such a, what a treat job that is. Boy. So
I think Barrett's mentioned having to do that before. Well, he brought it up last time when we were talking about this.
True. Well, I was looking at the news, and actually I have like, I've already got stories for next week. It's like the pledges thing. They're ones that aren't particularly time specific, and I bookmarked them, and then I didn't put them into the, I forgot to add them into the show prep. So I'm already ahead for next week. Kind of like we hope to be with the pledges. Yeah, and they're good topics. So be ready. You know, if you didn't pledge this week, you know, be ready to help us meet our goal next week, because we've got some cool stuff to talk about. Then,
it was funny. I was thinking about earlier on the show. You know, we were talking about the web and stuff, and I mentioned like the first web pages I saw were in '93. But it was funny because my friend was really excited about them, and I looked at them, and it was like personal pages for like instructors at universities or whatever for their students. And I just looked at him and was like, whatever, this isn't that interesting. I'm just going to go back to my IRC and Usenet. And I kind of missed the boat on that one.
Well, one of those things that's got this weird kind of very tiny window is a lot of people, their first experience with the web, if you got in a certain time frame, was you kind of, for a while, you sort of kept track of how far away you'd gotten web pages from. You know, I did the, like, where you go around the world looking at, like, newspaper sites. And so, oh, man, this one's in Austria. You know, I just pulled this down from a place in Austria. Or here's Australia or Russia or, you know, whatever, you know, in Asia, those kinds of things. And there was a small period of time where that was kind of like a big deal, where it was like, oh, man, you know, It's the future, dude, because I just read, you know, articles from servers in, you know, 20 different countries, or you could make your way around the world kind of thing. And then it's just become so old hat that you don't really even think about. First off, now they're all sort of .com, so you can't even tell by the URL if they're in another country or not. And nobody's like, if you went to work and you were excited because you'd seen, you know, because you looked at a web page that was in some other country, people would think you were insane.
Well, it almost doesn't even matter now, because whatever website you're using is probably running on some cloud hosting provider, and it's got a co-located server that it's replicated to in your geographic area anyway, because it's all on, you know, Microsoft Azure or Amazon EC2 or something. It's all the cloud has eliminated distances and made the web all homogenized.
Yeah, one of my favorites way back in the day was somebody on an IRC chat room that I was in, who was at in Antarctica. He was at McMurdo Base, and I believed him when he said it, but I did do a, you know, I did do the I don't think it's Traceroute on IRC, but there's the one where you can basically have it track the route from back to that person.
I don't know what that command is,
and, but... I did the track on him, and it's like suddenly it started hitting government stuff, and then it hit the satellite, and then it hit McMurdo.
Your round trip time went from like 30 millisecond, 40 millisecond, 800 milliseconds.
Kind of thing, but it was pretty awesome, you know, when you know that you're talking to somebody in real time who's in Antarctica. just that kind of telepresence thing. That wasn't happening a lot in 1995.
That'd be kind of neat. Take the webcam outside and look around.
So I used Bitnet before IRC. It was before IRC existed, and Bitnet wrote on top of the DECnet networks instead of regular, the internet.
This is old school.
ARPANET, and it was much slower, but it was the same thing. It had channels, but they were all numbers. You didn't have names, and
I remember going there. Slower back in those days.
I remember talking to people like in Finland and stuff. And you got really good at having three or four conversations with the same person, because the round trip time on a good day from I was going to A&M, so College Station to Finland and back, for me to send a message, them to get it and respond, was good. A good day was 15 to 25 seconds. A lot of times there was lag, and it was anywhere from like 45 seconds to a minute.
Crazy packetized relay.
So it was just, you would type something, and then you would wait a little bit and type something else, and then wait a little bit and type something else. And so you'd have like three or four rounds of conversation going with the same person, so you didn't have like this, I'm going to have to wait 1 minute for every time before I can reply again.
It's like the jugglers at two ends of the stage with like there's eight bowling pins in the air between each of them, and they catch them and return them. Lots of different conversations. No, I'm not that old school.
But that was also, I would ask people, do you know what email is? Do you have an email address?
Did you have an email address that was demarcated with an at sign or with bangs instead?
No, I didn't ever. My first ones were with @.
Okay.
But
you're not crazy old school.
But it was weird because almost nobody knew what email was. Mm-hmm. I mean, very rarely did people my age, anybody. But I graduated from A&M. I didn't have a job, so I moved back into this time vortex of Central Town, small Texas. So I had no clue what was going on for like a year. And it was this pivotal year of the internet and technology, because it was from like May 94 to around May 95. So
that's right about when I used the internet for the first
time.
And
I moved to Clear Lake is where I moved to. And so I went from like a year before, nobody knew what email was. I moved into Clear Lake. Everybody knows what email is. And everybody's using web pages. And I'm like, web pages? Like, I saw those and they, whatever. And now, like, that's what everybody's talking about.
Yeah, I had a friend in college who I kind of understood. He was telling me all about this thing called hypertext, and he was like sort of studying it for one of his classes and all this, and
I gonna come through.
Wasn't really getting it. And then flash forward 7 or 8 years, and I was building web pages, and it was all hypertext, and everybody was doing, and lots of people were doing it.
Well, it's a weird concept to describe, but then you see a web page and you're like, well, this makes total sense. I click on the text and it takes me somewhere else.
No, hypertext to me was amazing because I thought about every word inside of a document was searchable and, it was linkable, so it would go somewhere else. The whole idea that the text was interactive.
Yeah.
And you thought, I'm going to waste days of my life doing this, just clicking on links.
Well, and now it's such a basic concept. Trying to explain it as a concept is like, do what? Of course you click on links. What? I don't understand what else there would be. It's like,
How could you not understand this?
Believe it or not, didn't used to always be like this. Back when you had to go to FTP sites and you couldn't just search for something.
You had to grab an encyclopedia.
You had to go hope that warchive.wstl.edu had an open anonymous FTP slot, or ftp.cdrom.com had an open anonymous FTP slot, and they had an updated index.txt file, because otherwise you weren't finding what you thought you were looking for. You just wasn't going to be there. Oh, man.
Well, the strangest thing, the cool old school story is I remember when the table tag, when the ability to make tables and essentially use that to make a web page layout in some kind of rational order rather than just being down the center of the page with a gray background, when that came out. You had to be on, it was like comp sci www.html. dot authoring or some. It was way deep in on Usenet, and that came out because the Netscape people. I think it was Netscape Navigator, or else it was the predecessor to that, had put out a web page that had a table on it. That was just a table of data, and people like freaked out.
And we're still using it because you can't get that functionality in CSS. And what are we doing now? We're still screwing around with tables.
Although you could do animated, GIFs
and blinks,
and now they're back and they're still around.
Blink tag.
All right. Well, that music's telling us it's time to get out of here. We want to thank everyone who called in tonight or went on the web and made a pledge of support to Technology Bites. We had an awesome success. We did it early. Next week is another fundraiser. I'm hoping that we'll have equal success. You could be a part of that. If you didn't have a chance to donate tonight, consider tuning in next week and donating then.
Or pledging online between now and then and get us off to a good start.
If we hit our goal before we even start the show, we'll just do a show. How about that? Woo! So thanks to everyone for tuning in and pledging. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Lee.
And he's Lee.
Woo!